Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As has been mentioned previously, we had detailed discussion of the Finance and Budget Committee meeting on June the 26th. Are there any items anyone wishes to remove for further discussion from the consent agenda? There being none, I'd like to have a motion.
Move approval of action item 1.
I beg your pardon?
Move approval.
Well, this is a consent agenda for all of them.
Oh. Okay. I move approval for all of them.
Okay, great. Thank you, Larry.
A second.
Second. Region. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Like sign. Thank you. That's it for us.
Thank you. Next item on the agenda is the President's Report. Dr. Ransdale.
Normally at our summer meeting, obviously, we were in retreat session yesterday, addressed a number of important issues, so I will not go over those. But also at our summer meeting, we typically have year-end reports from several units across the campus that bring matters together for assessment as we close the fiscal year on June 30. And that is the case with five reports that are traditionally given this time of year. We'll start with the athletics year-end report from Todd Stewart. Todd?
Thank you, Dr. Ransdale. I will start. You all, I believe, have our annual report, so I won't read that to you, but we summarized that video format. So I've got a video I'd like to play here and then have a couple slides to show you, and then certainly would be happy to take any questions that anyone may have.
Hello, I am Western Kentucky University Athletics Director Todd Stewart, and on behalf of our athletes, coaches, and administration, I would like to recap our successful inaugural season in Conference USA. A year ago, we concluded our tenure in the Sun Belt Conference, one that included 133 total conference championships, and officially entered Conference USA on July 1st. Every year, our expectation is to win championships, graduate our athletes, and have an impact in the community. And because you only have one chance to make a first impression, it was vital that we have a successful season in each of these areas. In 2014-15, WKU became the first school in Conference USA's 20-year history to win 8 conference championships and a bowl game in the same season. We had a league-high 56 athletes earn the Commissioner's Medal for Academic Excellence, and we also had a league-high 55 athletes earn Conference USA Player of the Week honors. A total of 104 athletes graduated, and the cumulative average GPA of all 351 athletes is a 3.01. The graduation success rate for all 18 of WKU's programs was 87% in 2014-15, the highest in program history. Additionally, each WKU sport program has a multi-year academic progress rate score of 947 or higher for the first time in program history, exceeding by 17 points the NCAA's mandate of 930 required to be eligible for postseason play. Through our Hilltoppers with Heart program, WKU athletics combined to devote over 2,000 hours of community service in Bowling Green and beyond. We have more than doubled our total hours of community service over the last 3 years. And Endeavor, our entire department, coaches, and athletes, takes great pride in. 6 sport programs won conference titles for the second straight year, marking the first time since 2008 and 2009 that feat had been accomplished in 2 consecutive seasons. And WKU was one of only 12 programs in the nation to have its volleyball, women's basketball, and softball teams all earn spots in the NCAA tournament. Our football team won 8 games for the second consecutive season, behind the strength of the nation's fourth-ranked offense. Quarterback Brandon Dowdy led the nation in touchdown passes and passing yards, and Leon Allen ran for 1,542 yards. making WKU the first team in college football history to have an individual pass for over 4,500 yards and another rush for over 1,500 yards in the same season. WKU's win at undefeated and 19th-ranked Marshall was the program's first ever win over a ranked FBS team. And the Hilltoppers then captured the school's first ever FBS Bowl victory in the inaugural Popeyes Bahamas Bowl. We also will have an all-time high 10 players in NFL training camps this summer. Our volleyball team captured the Conference USA regular season and tournament titles and reached the NCAA tournament for the fourth time in the last 5 years and the eighth time overall under the direction of head coach Travis Hudson. Heather Boyan was named the Conference USA Tournament's most outstanding player, while Alyssa Cavanaugh was named Conference Freshman of the Year. WKU's 148 total wins over the last 5 seasons are the second most in the nation, behind only Penn State. Despite having a roster in which 18 of the 22 total players were freshmen or sophomores, our soccer team won 10 games for the 12th time in the last 14 seasons and was one of 8 teams to qualify for the Conference USA tournament. Under Ray Harper's direction, men's basketball is one of only 2 Conference USA schools and one of only 45 schools nationwide to post 20 or more wins in each of the last 3 seasons. George Fant and T.J. Price played their final season on the Hill before graduating. Price finished his career as WKU's 6th all-time leading scorer, while Fant ranked 8th in rebounding and 13th in scoring in WKU history. Women's basketball won both the Conference USA regular season and tournament titles and reached the NCAA tournament for the 2nd consecutive season en route to a 30-5 overall record, becoming only the 3rd men's or women's basketball team in school history with a 30-win season. Michelle Hurd was named Conference USA Coach of the Year. Chastity Gooch was named League MVP. Alexis Govan was the league's tournament MVP. And Kendall Noble was named the league's Defensive Player of the Year. Cross-country runners Katie Lever and David McConey earned all conference honors. And WKU's women's outdoor and men's indoor track teams each won Conference USA championships. 9 athletes earned All-American honors, including Chioma Aguanobi, who was also named Conference USA Female Track Athlete of the Year. WKU now has 27 conference titles in the 8 years Eric Jenkins has served as head coach. WKU's men's swimming and diving team won the Conference USA Invitational, and Fabian Schwingenschlagel earned All-American honors for the 3rd time after finishing 6th in the nation in the 100-meter breaststroke. Women's golf won 2 tournaments and had a program record 7 top 3 finishes. And for the first time in program history, 2 Lady Toppers earned all-conference honors in the same season, junior Eleanor Haig and freshman Georgina Blackman. Men's golf had 2 individual titles and 3 second-place team finishes and had 2 golfers finish in the top 25 of the conference tournament for the 3rd time in the last 4 years. 3 Lady Topper tennis players earned all-conference honors as the program posted 7 total wins in dual match play and had the most successful conference season in over 15 years. Our baseball team beat a pair of ranked teams on the road, winning at Louisville and Mississippi State, and also swept Kentucky. WKU has now won 7 of the last 9 games we have played against the Wildcats in baseball. Anderson Miller was drafted by the Kansas City Royals in the 3rd round of the Major League Baseball draft with the 98th overall pick, making him the 3rd highest drafted player in WKU baseball history. Our softball team won the Conference USA regular season and tournament championships en route to setting the school record for highest single season winning percentage, which included NCAA tournament wins over North Carolina and Georgia. Amy Tudor was named Conference USA Coach of the Year, and Miranda Kramer was named the conference's Female Athlete of the Year. Kramer also became the first player in program history to earn first-team All-American honors after leading the nation in strikeouts and fewest hits per game, while throwing a school-record 4 no-hitters, which also included the first perfect game in program history. We also benefited from unprecedented television exposure. In addition to the 18 games produced by the Hilltopper Sports Satellite Network, 102 Conference USA football games, and over 100 Conference USA basketball games were broadcast by league television partners CBS Sports Network and Fox Sports Media Group, with WKU games making up a significant portion of the broadcast schedule. It was indeed a special season in many ways, and our sport programs and staff have much to be proud of. However, if we only maintain, we are falling behind. So we will charge into 2015-16, aiming to raise the bar even higher. We look forward to celebrating many more successes together as we embark on the challenges and opportunities ahead. Thank you for your support of our student athletes, coaches, and programs, and go Tops!
Slides here. Wait for our guru Jeff Younglau to cue it up.
So the target audience for the video will be your HAF members and what else?
Season ticket holders. We actually emailed that out to them today and put it on our website. And when we have appearances, we'll play it too in front of those groups.
Great.
You know, obviously, we talk a lot about championships and graduation rates and community service. One thing I don't know that I maybe do as good a job of as I'd like to, when you sort through everything, is really letting all of you know how much our athletes just love being here. You know, beyond all the accomplishment of that, how much they just truly love not only playing the sport that they played here, but how much they love being a part of this university. And so what I really wanted to show is this was our tennis team after a home match in which it was obviously a little cold probably to be playing outdoor tennis. But, you know, you see the smiles on their faces. And this is actually, you know, the kind of winter that we had here. This is our softball team that one of the few things they didn't succeed in was getting 8 inches of snow off the field in time to play a home game. We actually did not get these games in, but that was all on their own. I mean, they just have a real passion for what they do, and so they got shovels and they went over to the field and they gave it their best shot. But I don't know if that story really gets told as much in terms of just, you know, how much they care about not only their sport, but just the pride they take in being a student athlete here, and we all do, and we all truly feel a need to represent the university. And one thing that we'll do in athletics moving forward, because we're going into Conference USA and the revenues that increase is on an annual basis now, we will transfer $100,000 to the music department. And the band is obviously a vital part of the game day experience, and the band has needs, and whether it's uniforms or, you know, covering some expenses that might challenge them a little bit. Now, hopefully, that'll make that a little bit easier for the music department to grow. So, when you add it all up, ultimately, we're in the business of college sports, and if they keep score in the game, then our goal was to win it. I couldn't imagine having any other goal. So, I thought I would just show you, you know, this past year, there are really 7 sports that are true team sports that play an actual conference schedule. And in Conference USA, in those sports being, as it says, the top, football, volleyball, soccer, men's basketball, women's basketball, and then baseball and softball, our winning percentage in all 7 sports combined was the highest in Conference USA this year. And then, of course, the question is, well, what does that mean outside the conference? What does that mean nationwide? Actually, in the nation, we were 12th last year in the nation in overall winning percentage in those 7 sports. So, you know, I feel really good about where we are right now, certainly what we've achieved. But I also believe that, you know, as we mentioned in the video, if you only maintain, then you're falling behind. So we're almost into August, and everybody's record's 0-0. And certainly our goal is we've celebrated what we've achieved last year, but our goal is certainly to build on that and continue to add to the successes that we've had. I'd be happy to take any questions if any of you have them.
Todd, congratulate them on their grade point average. Obviously, doing some good things there with tutoring and direction and everything. Think back of Bill Bradley at Princeton, Rhodes Scholar, great athlete. Do we have anybody that you can earmark that that'd be great if we ever could have an athlete that also had the
I agree. Probably the best candidate, we had Matt Rice, who was a catcher on the baseball team, graduated a few years ago and had a 4.0 GPA in mechanical engineering.
He was.
That's certainly something that we'd love to have.
Now he's in law school at Cal Berkeley.
Right.
You know, I want to compliment you, too, Todd. I think so. It's really well done. The strength of both the academics and the win. And it's something struck me. I didn't expect to think when I watched this. You know, it's we were struggling in our conversations about outcomes measures being the direction for higher education, and in academics we struggle with it, and it's down to a science in athletics, isn't it? I mean, you have the way to present the metrics, and I was sitting here thinking how we could do that, and I'm not sure. But I do. I think it's a really good presentation, and I'm really pleased to see that the music department is going to get some support because they need it too. So thank you very much.
Sure, no problem.
Particular note, the school had the second highest percentage winning. Their athletic director is a former athletic director here at Western. Old Dominion was number two.
Might I ask a kind of more global question?
Sure.
It's obvious some of the benefits of Conference USA, but what are the, when you look at the you talk about more exposure, revenue generations, what are the pluses and minuses that are coming to us as a campus from Conference USA? How would you frame it?
Well, I mean, you touched on one. I think the exposure. I mean, there's so much more exposure. And I think, you know, whether it's a sport program or athletics that gets exposure, the university as a whole, it, you know, benefits from that too. You know, I know last year when we beat Marshall in football, it turned out to be great timing because it was Friday noon Eastern game, and it was a huge win. And WKU was actually trending worldwide on Twitter. You know, so that's the overall brand that was trending worldwide. You know, my hope as we continue to move into the league is, and I believe people accurately perceive it as a much better league than where we were previously. And so if you're in a better league, then hopefully there continues to be more excitement about the people you play, which in turn brings more people to campus. You know, not just in sporting events, but just simply brings more people to campus. And obviously they come to either the football stadium or Ditto Arena to see a sporting event, but maybe they spend more time here. Maybe they eat at the fresh food court. Maybe they see a part of campus that they didn't otherwise see. And that really, not to get off topic here, but that's been one real plus. We host 6 state championship football games every year. And that really brings a lot of people within the Commonwealth of Kentucky, as we found out, to our campus that have never been here before. So you'll have somebody playing in the game, but you might have a younger brother or a younger sister or a parent that comes to campus for the first time. They see the campus for the first time. Obviously, there's a lot to see that's great, and they love it. And, you know, hopefully, I don't know, it's probably a little more challenging to measure that, but hopefully that experience can help maybe increase enrollment, too, by people simply, you know, seeing the campus and then certainly wanting to be a part of it.
Barbara, there were two years in our last few years in the Sunbelt Conference that our football team was bowl eligible and did not have a bowl to go to because the conference only had 2 bowl contracts. Conference USA now has 5, soon to go to 6 bowl contracts for its teams. So one of the important measures in the change in conferences was ensuring that if our team earns bowl eligibility, there will be a bowl to go to because bowls are affiliated with conferences. And Conference USA has much better bowl affiliations and better bowl games, but the volume is much higher, and we do not expect to be in a situation in the future where we have a bowl eligible team that does not have a bowl to go to. I want to answer man, I'm not going to say her name because I do not want to set up that kind of pressure on her, but this young lady that was recruited by our softball team this year. She'll be a freshman. She'll be here in a couple of weeks, enrolling as a first-year student, who was recruited as much as a Rhodes Scholar candidate as a softball player. She's a pitcher. She's a 4.0 pre-med. Incredibly brilliant, and it was between us, Harvard, and Yale. And she chose us because of softball. She's an outstanding pitcher, and she wanted the full experience, and she determined that we would be in a better position to groom her to be a Rhodes Scholar candidate than Harvard or Yale would be.
We ought to try.
That's our plan.
Bill Bradley 50 years later.
Yeah, that's right.
I liked your the way you opened, the way you closed. I mean, I think it's for all of us. But you say, if we only maintain, we're falling behind. And I think that's really a driver for everything on our campus.
Todd, I have a question. Has there ever been any quantitative way to evaluate the phantom benefit of every time that WKU University has been mentioned on the air during these bowl, the Marshall game and so forth? You said Twitter, we were at, that's a quantitative, you can say how much. But the cost to do that, if we had to find the funds to put WKU's name out in the general public on TV and the various medias, has there ever been any maybe coordination with the business college to see if there's a quantitative way to say this would be $30 million or $70 million or whatever it would cost to get that exposure? So that'd be something I'd like to look into.
That's a great point, and actually our faculty athletic rep, Craig Martin, is in the marketing department, and he and some students will be doing that. And actually, we've asked them, I don't have the results yet, but we've asked them to do that, to analyze that on a calendar year basis and try to put some type of value, you know, into what you just said, the various exposures that result from this.
Anything else for Todd? Well done. Thank you, Todd.
Thank you all. Appreciate your support and leadership.
John Paul Blair. John, come on up. John Paul Blair is our Associate Vice President for Development and is here to give the Development and Alumni Relations report. As you know, Catherine Costello is retiring, and Mark Archambault will begin his new service in a few weeks. John Paul will give the report on how our alumni and development programs ended the year. And you have this information at your place setting. Looks like this. So, John Paul, the floor is all yours.
Thank you very much. I have always enjoyed pinch hitting through the years to this group. And especially when we have as good of news as we have today, as we've ended our year end on such a positive note. I do not have a PowerPoint. I will be walking you through the handout that the President has referenced and pulling out some highlights, and we'll certainly save time for questions and comments at the end. But as you look at the first page with the pie graphs and some of our totals, I think it's worth emphasizing that our total endowment is at an all-time high at $143.7 million, which is broken down in the very first pie graph, with the WKU Foundation being approximately $75 million and the College Heights Foundation nearing $50 million, and then the third-party endowments that the university has are also reflected there. The second graph is the giving by source, and I'll get into that a little bit more as we move forward. And at the bottom, the giving by college and division, you can see the first category, which is the largest, about 55% or a little over $10 million of our gifts this past year were primarily given to scholarships, and I'll embellish on that here in a little bit as well, followed by athletics, and then all of the other academic areas and colleges are listed below those numbers. Let me just point out the $18.3 million. That is cash receipts only. So some of our counterparts, University of Kentucky, University of Louisville, when they do their year-end press release, it's more comprehensive. So if you see a larger number, know that they're also including pledges in their totals. They're including sponsored research and other items. So this is just the cash component, the $18 million. And I'll share with you a little bit more about our pledges later on as well. So if you look at the second page, there are seven highlights that I'll emphasize that tie into some of the successes we had. And I'll say that arguably this was our best year ever. While it was technically our second best year at $18.3 million compared to the $18.9 million, we received $17.7 million of that total in the form of cash and securities. So it was by far our best year for cash giving and gifts of mutual funds and stocks compared to the $18.9 million record year. That year we had $5 million in non-cash in-kind gifts. So from a cash flow standpoint, the impact that it had for our deans, for all of our academic leaders, for athletics, this was our best year that we've ever had. The remaining bullet points in the shaded area, it was a great year for giving from individuals. And WKU is like all other nonprofits across the country. The bulk of our giving is from individuals, so alumni. It was our second best year ever from WKU Friends. It was our best year. We had a record year from foundations. And our gifts to endowment were healthy at $6.3 million last year, which was a 27% increase over the year prior. I'm not going to highlight some of these gifts that we've pulled out individually, but I will say that we did receive our third ever eight-figure gift this past year, joining Gordon Ford and Jerry Baker. We received an eight-figure gift toward our Gatton Academy for math and science expansion. And then I love the diversity of the gifts that are noted here. An endowment for hospitality management, honors college endowment, student scholarships, an endowment for business ethics, gift to our Institute for Rural Health. And then if you look over on the deferred gifts that we've highlighted, geography and geology, WKU libraries, and many more towards scholarship funds. As far as our deferred giving, I will just say that we are on the cusp of $100 million. We're at over $99 million in documented deferred gifts that we have as an inventory for the university, which helps our provost, our deans, our academic leaders, everyone across the campus to really see the pipeline for our future that we have. And the national average, there have been studies done that nonprofits are aware of about 25% of deferred gifts that will ultimately benefit them. So with that being the case, there's probably more than likely some $400 million in deferred gifts that exist for the university. And we continue to work with our good attorney friends and financial planners to learn and document as many of those as we can. But we've documented more than 300 of them for close to $100 million. The remaining pages of the report I'll move through more briskly. But the next page highlights our leadership annual giving. Annual giving at WKU is defined as gifts of less than $10,000. And last year, there was some of that $18 million total, some $7 million was given in the form of annual gifts from 30,000 gifts, and close to 15,000 donors made gifts to the university. We had 2,435 members of our president circle, and the president and I will talk a little bit about an upcoming president circle event here in a moment that you will all be invited to. Our annual giving staff, they raise money through face-to-face visits, through direct mail, which I have a sample that I'll leave with Julia for you to look at and pick up if you'd like a little later, through our student calling program. And this year, we completed over 50,000 telephone calls to alumni and friends and raised over $350,000 in gifts and pledges through our phone-a-thon program. Our direct mail, we sent 62,000 pieces of mail. Our email program, we had over 73,000 email solicitation. So, as you can see, we are, with our resources, we are being very aggressive. And as Ty pointed out, we certainly cannot, if we maintain, we're falling behind in fundraising and development. Everything is measured in a way that we must continue to move forward, and we don't have the option of just maintaining. And we've had a lot of success that we're pleased to share. So the next page quickly, our marketing and communications division within Alumni and Development Relations, our division. They rebranded and launched a creative strategy with our Leadership Annual Giving program that was very successful, working across multiple channels and working with our colleges and our academic units a lot more successfully this past year. The group completed over 300 individual jobs, all the way from proposal writing. There were 70 custom proposals that they helped us to write as we were preparing to present, over $9 million in major gift proposals this past year. They also created a division-wide communications calendar, which was very helpful. And I will also leave with Julia, as we turn from this page, a copy for each of you and everyone in the room of our Hot Off the Press most recent Spirit magazine, our alumni magazine, which will appear in your mailboxes next week, but was able to pick those up this morning and wanted to leave those with you, and you'll be able to pick them up on your way out the door. Moving forward, our last unit within our division, our alumni programming unit, had a strategic plan goal to have 200 alumni events this year. They conducted 213 and were able to engage over 25,000 of our alumni through those activities. Some of the highlights are noted here: homecoming week, our society brunch, which we will again have next month, where members of our Society of 1906, which is a recognition group for people who have made a deferred gift to the university, and our Cupola Society, which is a fairly new group that we created a few years ago that recognizes consecutive years giving, which has proven important to our strategies. Scholarship celebration, another successful event. Over 400 people attended this spring. We had a great program. Really don't need a program. The highlight of the event is for those donors to have dinner and engage and to get to know and build relationships with their students. And it's a highlight every year for them and for us as well. The class of 65 had a great 50-year reunion. Our Topper Traveler program went to Greece most recently. There were close to 30 alumni and more friends who went on that trip. So our alumni programming element continues to engage our alums in a meaningful way as they have graduated and continue their relationship with WKU. The last page, as we move forward, I've just listed a few things. As we go ahead in this interim time between campaigns, and I think it's worth noting as I close out sharing, some of the great numbers that we experienced this past year, that the President and I and our entire team, that we were particularly pleased that this being the third year removed from a campaign, most universities nationwide experience a crest at the end of those campaigns as pledge payments are being paid, and then they tend to fall. And of our three-year campaign interim at this point, two of those years we've achieved $18 million, two of only three in our history in the last 3 years. So that's very encouraging. As we build a solid foundation for our next campaign, we were pleased with the provost investment of resources and the deans of their time. We had a dean's development retreat for all of our academic leaders, our development team, as we began to strategize and formulate plans for our next campaign. It was a time well spent. Current gifts and pledges. Again, talking about the last 3 years, there is momentum this past year that we're experiencing as we move a little further from the campaign and as our donors refresh and begin to make their next gifts and investments in the university. The first 2 years post-campaign, we had about $4 million in major gift pledges that were made. In this past year, we had over $10 million. So, again, a time of renewal, a time of new momentum that we're encouraged by. And we have right now over 115 major gift proposals pending for some $20 million. So, again, we're not maintaining. We're continuing to move forward. We are going to experience a transition to new leadership, and the president has mentioned Mark and might want to talk a little bit more about him or maybe save that when he comes to the next meeting. But I've met Mark and spent a little time with him, and we're all encouraged as we look forward and bringing him as a part of our team. And then the last thing that I will point to is the upcoming event. September 25 is our next President's Circle event as we open the new Honors College and International Building. And you're all invited to that. We're excited about it, and we'll talk more about those successes and celebrate that evening. And then homecoming week, November 2nd through 7, with the game being November 7 against, I believe, Florida Atlantic. But that concludes my comments.
25th of September, that will be a big weekend on campus. It's parent and family weekend. But we'll start with the dedication of that building at 4 o'clock with the Chamber of Commerce and our President Circle and faculty, staff, everything. It'll be a grand celebration. Robin's team is working on that. The orchestra has their first fall performance that evening in Van Meter. A lot going on Saturday around Parents Weekend. And a lot of our Greek organizations are celebrating 25th anniversaries throughout the fall, 50th anniversaries. Wishful thinking. 50th anniversaries throughout this fall semester and several that weekend. So that's going to be a pretty special weekend. But Friday evening, September 25, for that event. And Mark Archambault was here last week, early this week, I guess. He'll be back in a couple of weeks. They were able to select and conclude a deal to buy a home here in Bowling Green. And they are on their way, and they're going to, I told him to take the first week or two in August and take a nap, because he's going to hit the ground running. So he'll be starting actually in mid-August. But he and Amy are on their way. They concluded their service to Utah Valley University on July 17th. So a lot of work being done and a lot of plans being made as we move forward with our developmental alumni relations program.
Good report, Jim Paul. Thank you.
Thank you.
I note on the record year for gifts toward student scholarships, and I know we've got a matching program that I'm wondering about. I guess my real question is, what are the possibilities? Where are we on scholarship capacity? Where do we have to be to find our way toward having more support from foundation scholarship money, as opposed to ENG money to sustain some of our scholarship needs?
Well, I mentioned our Dean's Retreat. One of the primary topics of the Dean's Retreat was to begin to talk about the case for support for our next campaign as we build those priorities into our conversations and all of our marketing moving forward. Scholarships has been number one for each of the first two campaigns. I don't remember the number of the first campaign, but I know the second campaign we raised $202 million, and $54 million of that was in the form of student scholarships and gifts and pledges. So it certainly resonates with our alumni and friends, even corporations and foundations. It's number one. It continues to be, and we just need to continue to have those conversations as we meet with our alumni and friends, corporations, et cetera. We are still a very donor-centric. We have a very donor-centric approach as we're talking with them, because we want to maximize their giving. A lot of that centers around scholarship giving, but certainly it's, you know, Dr. Birch, it's number one, and it'll continue to be this next campaign as we're setting the stage for it. So I can give you those assurances.
It would be useful at some point, Mr. Chairman, perhaps to, if we could figure out how far away are we in capacity. I mean, how much more scholarship monies do we need to build that kind of cash flow that would enable us.
This is not a facetious response because it's a very serious response, but probably 50 to 100 years and about 3 or 4 more capital campaigns.
That much.
We're spending about $28 million on scholarships.
That would take a pretty big endowment.
And it would take a big endowment. Okay. And this year for student financial aid, $5,190,226. But that's mostly for, a lot of that is for endowment, and you're only spending the income and your income spending policy from that endowment.
We're spending $28 million overall.
University funds, yes.
On scholarship. Okay.
Holly Sites Foundation, I don't know the number, but I'm guessing they normally spend a couple million, $2 or $3 million a year on scholarships. I'm guessing, John Paul, I'd have to go back and research that. Maybe more than that because their endowment's now $47 million, so, 5%.
They have a 4.5% spending policy. So
right, so $47 million endowment. So you know they're spending $2 or $3 million on scholarships. So it's kind of like the question I get from time to time: without state support, why don't we just become a private university? Well, it would take about a $3 billion endowment to offset we do get from the state. So ask that question again in about 100 years after about another 8 or 10 capital campaigns. I mean, seriously, it's significant dollars that you don't just offset with private support, particularly
when we're
still in our infancy in building this philanthropic culture.
We're pretty long distance from
being
where we really can offer scholarships and have them endowed.
What we've got to do is we've got to stabilize what we're spending on scholarships and live within our budget for scholarships, which will mean, because the volume of outstanding students who want to accept our scholarships exceeds what we're budgeted to spend on those scholarships, and as we move forward in the coming year, we're likely to lose some scholarship candidates to other institutions if we cap what we're spending on scholarships and do not experience the financial strain that we are under this year because 30% increase in students accepting our scholarships.
I guess I was looking for a miracle. so I'm not really surprised.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll keep looking, I promise you that.
Good question, Barbara.
Chairman, I have a couple comments I'd like to make. First of all, to your staff, to Catherine, fantastic success. You all run a very lean ship, and the success that you have achieved has put you in the top of your peer group, and you've been awarded that in the past.
Thank you.
An observation on your second page, it was interesting to see your major gift highlights. Two of the very largest gifts come from folks that are not associated as an alumnus of this university, and I think that's extremely important for us all to recognize that we sometimes focus. And I had the privilege on the very first gift to go with Dr. Ransdell for that ask for the Gatton Academy, and that was a fantastic opportunity to see that in action. And the third item on the gift are personal friends of Dr. Ransdell and myself, and that gentleman has about 4 or 5 universities that he supports, and for him and his wife to be here, that is a fantastic opportunity. The last comment is on the next page on the President's Circle. Dr. Ransdell in 1998 asked me to be on the committee that began to advance that. And at that time, we had 250 people that were giving $1,000 or more. And to see it accelerate to almost 2,500 is a tremendous success for that program as well as your department to nurture and continue that positive outlook. So I want to say thank you very much to Catherine and to your staff for making this a top priority for our university for scholarship and development.
Good observation. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Anything else for John Paul? Well done. Thanks, John Paul. Off for a timeout over there.
Timeout?
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah.
All right.
Do you want to get a group picture real quick while we have everyone here?
Yeah, that would be great.
Can we do that before everybody comes out of the
room? Group picture real quick, take a short.
Of the Regents. First time in a long time, all 11 have been here.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, you are.
Is that for me?
No, you're
present.
Good
people not even in the room.
A couple asleep over here.
Of course, I don't understand how you make all the photo ops. That's what.
I don't know. This happens.
Been that way your whole life.
My whole life, Fred. That's exactly right. Sometimes I wish I wasn't there, though.
We hadn't had a photo made for weeks until today.
Us?
I've never had one,
man.
All of us.
Yeah. I start to say months, but I'm
missing. Missing Gil. We're missing Nikki.
Graduation.
Oh, yes. When we go on and get started back, how we get Brian queued up and whatnot. I think the other two will be here.
Yeah, you're on the boy.
Yeah, here he comes again now, so.
Still, good morning, and thank you very much for the time. Was asked to do a construction update on some, or just highlights, and then also focus on our summer projects that we do every summer. We have the least amount of people on campus. Because a lot of the things we do underground or do on campus are very disruptive, and I'm sure you haven't noticed. But our first project that we're working on, going to talk about, is our Phase 4 project of our science campus. We've done a lot of good things on campus, but we're primarily have been working on the new science building. It's currently in design. We're also working on the design to do about a $9 million renovation of Thompson Complex Center Wing, and then we'll invest about anywhere between $800,000 to $1 million in the Hardin Planetarium as part of the project. One of the nice things about this new building, it's going to allow us to do it first in the first phase. And our schedule is to get that building done in fall of 2017. Once that building is complete, it helps us to transition into the renovation project. It takes place in 120,000 square feet of the Thompson Complex Center Wing. This is just a site drawing. It's part of our design development phase of the project. I just wanted to share with the board and the president that we are adding parking here, which is accessible parking, where you'll be able to get out and to access Snell Hall, Biological and Sciences and Engineering Building. It gives you a nice entryway into that corridor of campus. Over here is our East 14th Street. We have a bus pull-off area that allows you to enter the building. And we have a nice patio courtyard for what I would call faces Thompson Complex Center Wing, and then we'll have a new fresh entryway coming off of State Street, lines up with the College High Hall. We keep changing the names of our buildings, and I keep wanting to go back when I was in school. So, next photo, or the rendering, is one to show you all. This is the latest rendering that the architects, Ross Stern Architects, have provided to us, and how this will be the primary entrance, or one of the primary entrances into the building, and then how this design ties into the Thompson Complex and in that area of campus of our Ogden College. Dr. Cheryl Stevens asked us to do some additional renderings around the buildings. You're standing on East 14th Street and also maybe the corner of State Street. Kind of gives you that angle of how we would look into that building. And then this is a view off of Chestnut Street and the portiere that goes through, and you can see the scale of people and how this building is a very a large structure, but it's going to be a very attractive structure. And we've used the brick and the stone elements to tie into the Schnell Hall that was just recently built a few years ago. This building really is all about labs and classroom space. I think it has the Dean Suite in the building, but predominantly the Thompson Complex Center Wing is the office complex for a lot of the activities, which would be biology, chemistry, physics, some other things that I think are in that particular building.
From the ratio of the $48 million state-funded budget, is what's devoted to the new building and what's devoted to improvements in the center wing?
Well, we've got about $9 million for the Thompson Complex Center Wing. We've got, let's just say, $1 million. $48 million would be left. It's a $48 million project.
And the middle million was for the planetarium?
Yes, there's $1 million for the planetarium.
Have we been able to keep the original scope for it? I mean, it's been time from getting the bond. How much have we lost?
Well, you know, this started out a smaller project, but it's now phase five, I believe, of our improvements to the science campus that started out with building of the engineering and biological sciences building, mm-hmm. and then the building of Snell Hall, and then the building of the renovation of then what is now College High Hall, which houses the math department, and then this project. So I guess it's phase four.
Phase four.
But you know, we've been at this for.
It's consistent with our master plan that was created in 2000 or updated in 2005. And this is really the last phase of that project. The strategy to go to a new building is actually going to be very positive to this whole campus.
1997, when I met with all the colleges and all the faculty and all the deans from a campus improvement standpoint, clearly the science facilities were in the most desperate need of improvement and were the most deteriorated and outdated. And so far it's taken us 18 years, and by the time this building is done, it'll take 20 years to deliver on that commitment to Ogden College to improve their facilities. And I'd have to add them all up, but I don't know, $120, $130 million worth of improvements, maybe more than that, gosh, with four different projects, maybe a lot more than that. So at any rate, we're about to complete the facilities upgrades for the College of Science and Engineering.
One question, Brian. What was the timeline on the North Wing construction?
We'll be ready for fall of 2017. Once that building has been completed, that's going to allow the transition for folks to go into the classroom spaces. The biggest challenge we have in Thompson Complex Center Wing is the basically, it's the fourth floor, which is all chemistry labs, has a lot of outdated hoods and things that will all have to be taken care of. We've got a large roof project that needs to be taken care of. But we'll be addressing a lot of the infrastructure needs of the building, and then we'll be doing renovations and modifications inside the building as needed to accommodate all of the transition of different departments moving to different places. It's really a chessboard of pieces that has to take place. But that project will be done, or the entire project is really January of 2018 is the schedule that we currently have. The goals. This is our Honors and International building that's being built on Normal. This is the rendering that we started with. Our next photograph is taken maybe on Monday, where they're working on the exterior of the building. As you can imagine, with the winter and the things that have been going on with the weather, we have had a real challenge. I say we being part of the general contracting team, A&K, the exterior of the building is behind. We've got challenges on the inside, but we're working through those, and we're going to be operational for school on the inside. But the front of the building, we're trying to get it completed in the far left side, there's going to be site work in the back of the building that we will not be done with, but it will be all completed and operational in the September for the grand opening. We have experienced a lot of challenges with the exterior work of the building, but again, in construction, every day is a work day, and they have been putting for the last 5 months a lot of time and extra effort in getting this building back to where we need to be operational. So obviously we're working with the provost office and scheduling, and we do have backup plans, so it will not be a disruption. It's just going to be a challenge, which we typically experience every end of the summer. So,
may I ask a clarification? It's just sort of an observation, campus-wise, community-wise, the work's going on day, night, and Sundays, and a lot
absolutely
of overtime. Is that a cost that's in the contract, or does that have anything to do with that?
There is no extra cost to the university. That is all. We have the contract with A&K Construction. I don't remember the exact value of that contract, but all those, they have a commitment in the contract is a substantial due date, and then they have a final completion date. They did not meet their substantial completion date, and that invokes some other things that goes on in the contract. But for the last 5 months, they have been doing the things that are needed to get this building so it'll be operational for our university. A&K is still the same contractor that did the Gary Ransdell Hall facility. They did an excellent job with that. They've done an excellent job with this project. And they have made the commitment to the university to do everything in their power to get this building ready.
But their overtime costs are their costs. We're paying
that's
the bid price for
so
the
we
building.
We don't lose anything.
The challenges you're talking about.
They're paying liquidated damages at $1,000 a day now, every day past the date by which it was to have been delivered. So we should, you know, in hindsight, we're kicking ourselves for not making that $5,000 or $10,000 a day. But so they're paying us a penalty every day past their due date, and all the overtime costs are at their expense. They didn't get it under roof and enclosed by the time winter set in, which their timeline called for. So their delays are
it's their responsibility.
Okay.
It's not the weather related, in other words. I mean, if it's weather related and they can't complete.
Well, let me do this. Everybody wants to go to the weather related. Any project that's over 365 days, we do not have to grant them weather days in our contract. So our contracts are well written, protect the university, and we hold our contractors accountable. So that is, but Larry is 100% right if it was a shorter duration, and it depends on the details in the contract. So we do have some strong language in there. We have some very strong language about substantial completion, and we do that. I give you an example of a future, another building, is this Gatton Academy that we have. Each year, 120 students. We're doing three additions to the building, which are going to affect two wings of the building, and then this center section are going to be new additions to the building. Not a lot of square footage, but it makes the project much more complicated every time you start to attach and try to match and get into a building. The liquidated damages, for example, on this particular structure is $5,000 per day, and then if they don't meet final completion, it's another $5,000 per day after that. So there's a lot more incentive to the general contractor in their subcontractor contracts to make sure that this building gets completed on time. This project was started in May. We broke ground, had a groundbreaking. And we're already doing a tremendous amount of site work. They're working on getting the pad ready to do the foundations to start to get the building up and get it under roof before bad weather sets in. Again, this project is privately funded. Right now, everybody is doing the things they need. They're on schedule, and we're watching that project very closely. It's also being done by A&K Construction. Again, very good contractor. And we're glad to have them as part of our team members.
Brian, one question to clarify. When you say operational for fall going back to HCIC, that doesn't mean complete. That just means...
It's operational. That means that the university will be able to use the facility for its intended purposes. We did that with the ESU. We've done that with the Alumni Center. There's a lot of things that we, as these projects move forward, that we can go take occupancy. We get a temporary certificate, but the interior of the building is much further along than the outside of the building and the site work.
But there will still be some work continuing after.
Absolutely.
After that date.
And that is not that untypical in these types of large projects that happen. But we try to do that, and we schedule that around, working very closely with them. And this has been ongoing for quite some time.
Brian, would you go back one more slide, please? Next one. I'd like to bring everyone's attention, and I didn't want it to slide by, when you use the word, this is private funding, and we've talked about transparency within the university campus, and then we were trying to translate what's going on the campus grounds as when we see these wonderful projects unfold, and we forget to point out that that's private money building a big building. So as we are communicating with all of our family, we should say, yes, we're struggling with other areas within the university to find the funds to do what we need to do, but this came from an individual.
And a $10 million gift.
A $10 million gift. So
all paid half of it out, and he's on schedule.
Exactly.
Ahead of schedule, I'm paying his gift out. And so this is all going to wrap up by next summer on time, on schedule, and within budget.
It was in budget and basically paid for. So I didn't want to go by because that was a point you made. So thank you very much.
And it's going to allow the opportunity for another 80 students to attend
Gatton
this facility.
It'll take it to 200, the total enrollment in the Gatton Academy.
Which the state's going to give us $2 million.
Right.
That
$2 million began to flow this month, this fiscal year, in that added state appropriation.
This next project is one that we've been working on for over 11 years. It's our high voltage phase 8. That we continue to do. We've invested about $1.2 million this summer. We work with some infrastructure money, some critical needs money, and we have very consistently and diligently worked on doing some things underground for our campus that gives us security, reliability, and seamless operation during the busiest times of our year. This project is actually completed, and all the buildings that we were connecting to the new high voltage is underground, and is a milestone for this project. We no longer have any overhead lines. That means on telephone poles, basically, electrical lines running down streets where trees can fall on them, drunk drivers can hit them and knock them over, and suspend service to our facilities. This phase of the project has now put all of our electrical power underground, and that is a big milestone for the university. I'm excited about it. But it does give us a tremendous amount of reliability for our users, end users, et cetera. This is the type of work. This is actually being done in the valley, or between Rhodes, Harlan, McCormick, and Gilbert. And this is just an example of what happens during the summertime. And a lot of us, because it's not directly on a roadway, we don't see the amount of work that happens and transpires across our campus. But that's a great example of one of the projects that we do, and we've been doing this every summer. The good news, we see the light at the end of the tunnel. There's about $6 million left to finish the entire underground electric for the university. And that is wonderful. So we'll continue to work on that each summer. We have a master plan. We have a schedule. And we have a list of the buildings that are yet to be completed. This is very important. This is a project that's going on Normal. They've already milled the Normal. The city of Bowling Green, Kentucky donated a section of State Street all the way down to Regents. It belongs to the university. It gave the university the ability to make tremendous pedestrian improvements, wider sidewalks, more crossings in the appropriate places, slow the speed down, and add paving and lighting, and just a tremendous improvement of the visual as we go down part of a very integral part of our campus. And as we have purchased properties and constructed new facilities, this becomes just an integral part of WKU. Very proud of it. The curb work has been completed. By the end of next week, we'll have new paving, and that section of Normal down to the Regents and intersection will be completed. So, again, another very important part of a strategy and a continual process. This is the new parking lot that's on Russville Road. That land was purchased, and we were given the task to design and complete the parking lot to start for the fall semester. They're putting in lighting, and it'll have the same amenities as our parking lots on campus. Work very closely with parking and transportation, and this parking lot is well underway and will be paved and ready to go for our students. Has 104 spaces, and then there's an additional 4 handicap spots. It's going to be a commuter lot. It'll have a bus every 10 to 15 minutes or every 12 minutes, whatever their schedule is today, that go by, pick people up, and that's provided during the day for our students.
I just comment the very affordable parking, the construction of it, how affordable it is for space. I mean, it really is. It's less than half of what we normally put in it, and so that was a great move.
Yeah, it is going to be a very positive addition to our campus. This next project is several projects. I kind of lump these in together. It's not as important where it is as what it is. This is steam piping and condensate replacement projects that happen throughout our campus during the summer as needed. We have underground utilities that some of them exceed 60 and 70 years old. And when we have those they fail. And so this is an area in front of Ivan Wilson or in front of the colonnade that it's a section of steam piping that actually goes underneath the steps where we did a renovation a year or two ago. And this line that runs through here into that building had completely failed. And you can see that contractors, students, we actually do all our own GIS and GPS mapping and marking and photographs and document the underground utilities for our campus. While we give our students tremendous training, they're a great asset to planning, design, and construction to be mapping. And also we've expanded that a little bit, and we have our facilities department with well-trained GPS and GIS personnel that are also contribute to that effort. So it's very important to our academics because we do use a lot of our very talented students. And every student that has come through PDC has been hired by a large professional firm. And it doesn't matter if it's in the AMS, it doesn't matter if it's interior design, but when they leave our department, they are extremely well-trained because we actually give them real responsibilities with close full watch. That's been very positive results. I should mention that we have several of these projects going on campus, and Van Meter Hall is being affected, Gordon Wilson Hall is being affected, and then also Cherry Hall they're all getting new steam line infrastructure into the building. And why did we choose that one? Well, this building here is, I've just showed you the front, it's Gordon Wilson Hall. Gordon Wilson Hall had a major steam failure last winter. We made emergency repairs. We cleaned up a real mess, but that building is probably in the 1930s, I guess, as an age. It has an underground tunnel underneath the building that goes all the way around, and all of the piping is being replaced because it failed our crush test, and it was no longer usable. So it had completely, this is what we call deferred maintenance, it had completely failed, and we've dug it up, replaced it. They're putting the building back together. Along with that, all the air handling or unit ventilators in the building have all been taken out. We're putting brand new equipment, and out of critical needs funding, we're putting over $500,000 into this structure to provide the occupants a comfortable place to hold their studies and classes for this fall. That project's underway. On the exterior of the building, because it is a historic building, it's something that we want to continue and maintain classical architecture on our campus, and these buildings do need to be maintained. So we, this summer, have done about a $80,000 improvement. Architrave is this beam. I call it an architrave, but the beam that runs across here, a lintel, sitting on top of the capitals. From that point up, we had completely re-pointed that and made improvements. I didn't want to bore you with a bunch of other slides of small projects, but we are doing about over $4 million in summer projects. There's about 20 projects on our campus that are being done. We're putting new roof coatings on Cherry Hall, new roof coatings on Preston Center. We're changing out on our stadium. We did about $100,000 worth of structural concrete repairs. We're working on the Centennial Fountain, replacing all of the internal pumps and piping and controls for that facility. We put a new elevator in Kentucky Museum that had not been there, and that's a safety. And we have those on a schedule. We've got a 5-year master plan of what elevators have to be replaced and when. We're doing fire alarm upgrades, and again, to mention lighting projects, compliment Provost Gordon for helping us with that, but we've already done a lighting going to LED for our museum on the first floor, some on the second. DFM has put in another project that's working on the second floor and third going to LED. Tremendous energy savings will be realized. The lighting is not UV. It's better for your artwork. Still arena lighting we're working on. We've got some parking lot lighting. So there are, about 69 to 70 projects that we're working on across campus along with these summer projects in about a value of about $2 million that we are currently doing across our campus for to make it better. And that completes just a snapshot and an update, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Anything else for Brian?
I want to say thanks to Brian. I mean, as someone who's here every day and sees the improvements and knows how hard PDC works and what good job, and unfortunately having to work sometimes with very tight timelines. But yeah, it's, y'all are doing a great job, and it's very much appreciated and recognized.
Thank you. And I want to, Gordon Johnson sitting over here in the corner, but I want to acknowledge the outstanding teamwork and collaboration with IT and facilities in a lot of these projects, because they are...
The Division of Public Affairs shares...
We could not do what we do without...
The Division of Public Affairs shares WKU's impact and reach through communications, outreach, and advocacy efforts, and provides campus-wide support for marketing, special events, and public awareness activities. As the primary contact for all major campus events, campus and community events had a hand in more than 600 events and activities campus-wide last year, including commencement ceremonies, homecoming, concerts, athletic events, fundraisers, special guest presentations, youth camps, prospective student visits, weddings and receptions, and many more. Presidential events. The Division of Public Affairs. The Division of Public Affairs shares WKU's impact and reach through communications, outreach, and advocacy efforts, and provides campus-wide support for marketing, special events, and public awareness activities. As the primary contact for all major campus events, campus and community events had a hand in more than 600 events and activities campus-wide last year, including commencement ceremonies, homecoming, concerts, athletic events, fundraisers, special guest presentations, youth camps, prospective student visits, weddings and receptions, and many more. Presidential events. The
special events and ceremonies, government community relations, media, marketing and communications, which includes social media, and also working on the university homepage and WKU public broadcasting. Just a few things I'll point out before we watch the video that you've now had two sneak listens to anyway. Peer recognition is really a very, very good measure of success, particularly peer recognition from that's outside of university. The Emmy Awards, we're awfully proud of the Emmy Awards, and I get absolutely zero credit for any of these, but really excited that we'll be going on Saturday, tomorrow, to Lexington to the Regional Emmy Award presentations. We have 7 nominations, and so we're hoping to come home with a little bit more bling on that one. Kevin Willis is sitting back there from our NPR station. So on the peer recognitions in the very back of this, you'll see that the Emmy nominations, you'll also see awards, first, second place awards from the Kentucky Broadcasters Association, and then Professional Marketing Association, gold and silver awards that have gone to the public affairs team. And then the Council for Advancement and Support of Education in Kentucky case awards. You'll see the grand awards, and they're in every area that we touch. Best practices for our advertising campaign, it's all within your reach. Also for online, for publications, for photography, for special events, and for writing in the media. So, I mean, we've really covered the gamut in terms of being recognized by our peers in every area that we touch, and I'm very proud of our public affairs team for their work. You visited the PBS studios yesterday, and so President already mentioned their year-end record fundraising, and what an amazing team effort that was, from the radio and TV pledge drives to securing major gifts as well to support PBS and NPR, and also things that support other areas. One of the big gifts will support the CEC and help us promote things like the Kelly Autism Program. So we're excited to see that unfold over the course of this year. We have, and again, you'll see some of this in the video and in the report. The video overlaps the academic year. The report is the calendar year 2014. But this team has been involved in over 600 events. They've published over 700 stories. They have taken over 70,000 photographs. Our news blog has more than 400,000 views in a given year. And that's been a real push for us, is to get our story directly to our audience rather than through any other medium. And more than 600 digital and print projects that support the campus, more than 10 million views to the WKU homepage. Over 60,000 Facebook followers, nearly 8,000 Twitter followers. We spent a lot of time this year talking about social media with you all, and that is growing for us. We did add a social media coordinator. That's allowed us to be a lot more interactive, working directly with students and the campus community to answer questions and be engaged. And some hashtag campaigns, one I won't spoil it, you'll see in here, that was particularly fun for everybody. And then the thing that I'm most proud of is the partnerships that we have through public affairs with other campus departments. Currently working with over 25 departments across the campus on their strategic marketing plans or other marketing efforts. And that is that's support that's coming from a small team, and we really, really appreciate being able to work across the campus to promote what everybody else is trying to do, in addition to what we do for university marketing in general. We have just completed and will launch our third commercial in the It's All Within Your Reach campaign. And so with all of that, I'll turn it over to the video that Jeff is so anxious to play. And then if you have any questions or comments, I'll be happy to.
Those are all just teasers.
The Division of Public Affairs shares WKU's impact and reach through communications, outreach, and advocacy efforts, and provides campus-wide support for marketing, special events, and public awareness activities. As the primary contact for all major campus events, campus and community events had a hand in more than 600 events and activities campus-wide last year, including commencement ceremonies, homecoming, concerts, athletic events, fundraisers, special guest presentations, youth camps, prospective student visits, weddings and receptions, and many more. Presidential events require additional protocols and conventions of etiquette, which are ensured by the Office of Ceremonies and Special Events, the President's Circle Gala, welcome receptions for students and faculty, and social gatherings for campus guests are just a few of the events hosted by President Ransdell. The WKU Spirit Masters often assist with presidential events, providing hospitality to campus guests and spreading the spirit of WKU. The Office of Government and Community Relations is WKU's liaison to local, state, and federal governments, which leads advocacy efforts on behalf of the university with policymakers. Last year, those efforts resulted in $48 million for the renovation and construction of Thompson Complex, as well as $2 million to expand enrollment in the Gatton Academy from 120 to 200 Kentucky high school students. Using a variety of communication tools from social to traditional media, Media Relations promotes and publicizes WKU's impact and reach through its programs, faculty and student achievements, and academic quality, service, and research initiatives. In the past year, Media Relations distributed more than 700 news releases, shot 700 photo assignments, resulting in nearly 70,000 photographs, and produced dozens of videos, including the weekly View from the Hill. Because the website and social media are primary sources of information, the WKU News Blog is updated multiple times daily and is the go-to source for news and information. Some of the most popular stories of the past year were WKU's feature in the New York Times, the university's designation as a top Fulbright producer in the U.S., the Gatton Academy's third consecutive year as America's top high school, and the unprecedented week-long closing due to winter weather conditions.
Choosing a college is a major decision.
So why did I choose WKU?
WKU's marketing and recruitment campaign, It's All Within My Reach, showcases WKU students who participated in focus groups, photo and video shoots, and creative design of the campaign. Marketing worked closely with admissions and enrollment management staff to ensure the messages would support their efforts to recruit and retain students. In addition, the marketing team completed over 600 print and digital projects for departments across campus while offering their expertise in the areas of social, web, and mobile marketing. With more than 10.5 million visits to the WKU website, it is a primary source of information for students and parents, faculty and staff, and the media. The website is undergoing a renovation with a new homepage expected to roll out before the end of 2015. Social media is becoming increasingly more important and is used to build relationships through information sharing, student recruitment and engagement, customer service, event promotion, news, and emergency alerts. Multiple successful hashtag campaigns engaged audiences this year, including Skydive Gary, WKU Photo Friday, and People of WKU. WKU's three regional campuses have great potential for enrollment growth, and the marketing staff is working hard to elevate brand awareness in those communities while focusing on recruitment and enrollment growth for transfer, military, and joint admissions students.
Our business is telling stories that start conversations.
Public broadcasting transitioned from IT into public affairs in 2014, and as a result, the university adopted an editorial integrity policy to ensure continued high-quality journalism for both television and radio. PBS celebrated 25 years of being on the air, and WKU Public Radio News staff members were featured nationally on NPR programs. The combined operations of WKU PBS and NPR raised in excess of $1 million in private gifts, reaching funding goals set by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The regional Emmy nominations for WKU PBS in 2015 marked 12 consecutive years of nominations, with this year's winners to be announced on Saturday, July 25th. In the coming year, public affairs staff members will continue to look for opportunities to share WKU's impact and reach, and will ensure that every project or event is developed and produced in a professional and cost-effective manner.
That's our year.
Well done.
You Todd win the co-award for Best Entertaining Video for 2015.
Hear that, Todd? Co-awards.
I have a point of curiosity. How in the world do you all keep up with all that Twitter and...
Oh, gosh, Barbara, how about you just come up there and spend an afternoon with them and you can see. You know, it's the 24/7 rule. In all honesty, they are just a great team. There are about four people who in our operation who stay on it 24/7, and then I don't want to act like we're the only ones. They disseminate stuff to people all across this campus who answer questions and interact with people on all different social media. I mean, we are it's just constant.
It's not a constant, it's critical. We spent a lot of time at last year's summer retreat talking about social media strategies and so forth.
She was on, so on top of something, I couldn't believe it. I thought she must be standing there and looking over.
But the minute we're not completely and fully engaged and immediately responsive to all the social media platforms, that's also the minute we begin to be irrelevant.
And some of those folks, I mean, you know them, but Tommy Newton, of course, Bob Skipper is involved in that as well. Corey Martin, you all met Corey. She gave the presentation last year or earlier. I guess it was last year, wasn't it? And then Kayla Dowdy is our new individual that we hired last August. And Stacey Biggs. And those are primary. But everybody jumps in and does when it's needed, as I think we all saw yesterday. Whenever we moved our event from inside to outside, everybody jumps in. That's the public affairs team for you. Anything? No questions, Mr. Chair?
They asked me to give you a pass.
Okay. No. I'll take it then.
Last report, Gordon Emsley, research. We've undergone a significant transition in our research focus and structure this past year. And Gordon and a lot of people across academic affairs has been working hard to make sure that this is done in a thoughtful way. And he's got some introductions, and our final report will be our research report for the year.
Well, thank you. Again, I'm last. Gil, I got...
Okay, thank you. Just show me where it is.
I do not have a video. I have some PowerPoints, and I have some numbers. But also to my right is Dr. Larry Snyder, and he'll show up in just a second. Part of the research organization, I apologize, this chart's a little blurry, but what we've done is essentially taken the research function, and it's in three components. On the right side, Senior Vice President of Finance Administration, Ann Mead, now has authority over the activities at the Center for Research and Development. You see Jeff Hook down there. Those are all the folks down the hill. On the far left is the Research Foundation, and Dr. Cheryl Stevens is the new president of the Research Foundation. Today I'm going to focus on the middle channel of that chart. We have a new Associate Provost for Research and Creative Activity. I want to emphasize the title in that. Larry assumed those duties in July 1. Actually, he kind of assumed them about 7 weeks before that unofficially, but officially he's been on board since July 1, and a lot of things happening. By dividing it to three, we find this very useful in terms of checks and balances between the three elements of the research enterprise. Having three heads at the table is actually very useful, and Cheryl and Larry and I actually went to dinner the other night on this very issue. So, the middle chunk of that chart is to do with the Office of Research and Creative Activity, and has got to do with chasing excellence, as I call it. You'll hear a lot of dollars today, but I think Larry and I both agree that the object of the exercise is not to go after dollars. It's to present a profile of excellence and research creativity across the campus from which the dollars will logically follow, and there's evidence already that that's taking place. I'll say just one example. And that's our history department, which has been extraordinarily successful. And some of its faculty achieving National Endowment for the Humanities summer stipends, various fellowships, and so on, to the tune of a total of about 8 or 9 over the past 2 to 3 years. This level of achievement just typifies what we're striving to achieve in overall excellence. And as I say, the dollars will follow. So let me show you some highlights of our research creative activity enterprise at WKU, starting with our very successful FUSE program, or Faculty Undergraduate Student Engagement. I say these are small grants. They're not that small. A typical FUSE grant is about $5,000, sometimes $6,000 if it involves an international component. And that is used to provide a small stipend to the student, but also dollars to the department to help defray the costs of the faculty members' time, and also support for travel to present the results of the research, research supplies, equipment, materials, and so on. We had a student need to build a theater stage and so forth. So those are like typically $5,000 grants. We asked the student in consultation with a faculty mentor to actually write a formal proposal with a budget. It's reviewed, it's approved, they have to present a progress report at the end, and several of the board members may recall we presented some of the results from our student FUSE grants at one of these meetings about a year or so ago. With about 100 or so grants awarded, this is not a small expense. It's about $500,000 a year, but it's been extraordinarily successful in promoting not only student research, but also engaging the faculty in this enterprise.
Since this comes from one-time money, Dr. Emsley, are we going to be able to be having these FUSE grants next year?
Yes. Absolutely, yes. We have dedicated the full amount of money to the full 100 grants next year. Many of our FUSE grant recipients present their research results at this event, held every March, called Research Excellence Creative Heights Week. This year we had, again, about 400 presentations by students. A new little thing we had, President Ransdell even contributed, a little 3-minute TED Talk, where we asked faculty and students to summarize the essence of the results in 3 minutes, no more, no less. Reach Week is organized by a group of faculty, student research committee, with an extraordinarily small budget, but they nevertheless put on a wonderful event. The CPE is currently considering research metrics for their new strategic agenda for the state, and the undergraduate research metric they are homing in on involves out-of-class research presentations by students. And so we'll do extraordinarily well in that metric with the over 400 simply at Reach Week alone. The Research and Creative Activity Program is a program to provide faculty mini-grants, if you like. There are currently 2 cycles per year and 2 award levels. One is a $16,000 award cap, and the other is an $8,000 award cap, depending on the type of research and type of resource you need to carry it out. That is a base budgeted item. It's approximately $200,000 a year in the budget to fund these projects. It funds not only seed projects to encourage faculty to get involved in external grant writing efforts, but also a lot of support for areas in which external funding is not as readily available as it is in other areas. During the spring semester, we had a couple of committees, the Associate Deans for Research, the so-called Research Council Working Group, and also an ad hoc committee of the Senate got together to discuss ways in which the research enterprise, particularly funding for research within the university, could perhaps be improved. One of the ideas they came up with, and this is something we'll be trying to implement during the coming year, something we're calling Q-tags, the idea being that sometimes the dollars you need to get a research or creative effort underway, you can't wait for the next cycle. This is something that's going to happen within the next month, the next 6 weeks, and it's typically a fairly small amount of money, you know, hundreds or, you know, a few thousands of dollars, and we're going to create a mechanism whereby faculty can apply for these year-round. The funding for this is not base budgeted, per se. We believe we'll get funding from this from the external grant facilities and administrative costs, the so-called F&A costs that we generate from external grants, and we'll discuss a little more about that later. We have an intellectual property committee. The board made a call. We may not call a policy number, but it's 2.8102. It's the policy on intellectual property, whereby faculty or staff or even students who have developed intellectual property, whether it's a device, a process, an idea, can present it to the vice president for research, or now myself or Larry. And we have this committee that's been formed now to review these requests and to determine if the university has a sufficient interest in the intellectual property to pursue the cost of prosecuting a patent for that invention, or whether we simply want to give the rights to the inventor for them to pursue in their own. The committee has met extensively during the last 6 months, seven or eight times, in fact. Jeff Hook from the Center for Research Development chairs it. We have some outside members and some faculty participants. And so far, we're doing quite well. We have one patent currently being sought. I could tell you what it was, but then I'd be violating the confidentiality provision. But I assure you this is a thing that is highly appropriate to this university and its environment. We've also negotiated fees on certain contracts, upfront fees, in lieu of intellectual property rights, and those fees will help provide the dollars for further investment in patents. And one interesting one is there's a company planning to market our MESANET data. Kentucky MESANET is a series of weather stations across the state that collects real-time weather data, you know, gigabytes of data. And this is an iPhone application that would allow you to translate that data into something that's a little more informative for the general user. And we're working in agreement to develop that.
Are we actually, I noticed that we had one, but it's, you looked at the patentability. Are we actually generating revenue from any patents at this point?
Not significant at this point. I have high hopes for that first one.
Okay.
That it will. That's one of the things we asked the IPC to look at. Is it patentable? And if so, is it likely to generate sufficient income to justify the investment up front? Okay. Somewhere. There we go. So I do want to talk about numbers. I want to talk about external research funding. I want to talk about three numbers, the same three numbers you've seen before. This is total extramural funding. These are dollars that come in from all sponsored projects, whether research projects or other forms of sponsored project. Then there's a number called the Higher Education Research and Development, or HERD number. That's a number the National Science Foundation puts out every year. And that's typically your competitively awarded federal proposals that have to be sent to review by panels and so forth. And the third number I want to talk about is this facilities and administration number, is that some external awards carry F&A support, not all, and F&A to some extent is the feed forward that drives the research enterprise, and so there'll be a fair amount of focus on that F&A number. Okay. Last 4 or 5 years, the red bars show the total sponsored projects awarded WKU in millions of dollars. We peaked at about $23 million in 2011. A slight drop, a very difficult environment for external research funding. We believe we flattened out quite well. And the blue bars show this HERD number, which again peaked at about $11 million in 2012. And that's the, you know, federally supported, competitively awarded grant number, which is currently about half of our total sponsored project award. Okay, this is the number of proposal and award. What I've done here is divided the proposals we submit and the awards we receive into dollar categories. So the left-hand couple of bars are for proposals in the amount of less than $10,000. Next bar from 10 to 30, from 30 to 50, and so on. And the very right-hand bar is $1 million-plus proposals and or awards. And the blue numbers show the success rate, which is the ratio of awards to proposals. And when I first saw this, of course, I didn't believe it, because we have apparently 205% success rate, which means we get twice as many awards as proposals. And it turns out that's true. because many of the awards in that category don't actually require a proposal. We're simply, you know, given an award, and we record that as an award, but there's no proposal to go with it. Getting into the kind of main area, though, we are extraordinarily successful. Extraordinarily successful at the university in a success rate proposal. The average success rate for all these proposals is 77%. And that's in an era where the average NSF proposal has about a 1 in 10 chance of being funded. National Endowment for Humanities is slightly better. It's 1 in 5. But nationally, for any university to have a success rate as high as this, it is a remarkable achievement, and it shows that we're not only writing competitive proposals, but targeting them to the right areas where funding is likely to occur. That's the number of proposals. But if you look at dollars that those proposals earn, again, same categories. If you go along the bottom, you're going from less than $10,000 proposals. And although we're very successful at getting less than $10,000 proposals, you see it doesn't add a huge amount of dollars to the coffer. That's not to say they're not valuable. They are extremely valuable in this pursuit of excellence. But I've focused on that bar between $200,000 and $500,000 per proposal, at which we are 56% yield rate. For every dollar we propose, we get 50 cents back, 56 cents back. And again, that is an extraordinarily successful rate. We're not quite as successful in the million-dollar category, of a 30% success rate with a $5.2 million earned out of $17 million proposed. But the reason I've highlighted that thing with a big arrow on it is I think that's what I call our soft spot. I think that is where we have enormous potential to increase the dollar revenue from external sources. Yes, we will continue to write small grant proposals, absolutely, but in order to increase our dollar portfolio, I think we need to expand on our already considerable success in that $250,000 per proposal domain. And I'll be discussing a few strategies to do that in the next few minutes. I want to talk about F&A. F&A is facilities and administration. Sometimes you'll hear it referred to as indirect costs, or sometimes held as overhead. It basically is a charge that you're allowed to put on external grants to cover the cost of the research infrastructure that is not specifically tied to that project. So the laboratory that needs the utilities paid for, if there are general costs associated with administration of research, anything of nature, building construction and so forth, that's typically put in the F&A category. And every year, we negotiate our F&A rate with the Office of Management Budget. They send a consultant in, and they look at what was your expenditure on research-related infrastructure the previous year and divide by the total number of grants awarded, and that's called the negotiated rate. And our federally negotiated F&A rate is 42%. So if you were to submit a grant for $100, and then you added F&A, that total grant award would have to be $142, of which $100 is for direct costs and $42 is to support this basic infrastructure. It is calculated in arrears. It is dollars intended to pay for expenses that have already been incurred by the institution. And it's very important to realize that. When we get those dollars, we distribute them, and 40% of the dollars we collect go to the originating college, and they in turn trickle it down through departments, sometimes even to the principal investigator level, to support general research within that college or department. 20% goes to support the Office of Sponsored Programs. The E&G budget for the Office of Sponsored Programs is not sufficient to support all the staff in that unit. And furthermore, it's a logical growth thing. The more proposals are going out the door, the more staff they need, so the more dollars they need to do that. So we return 20% of all the F&A to the Office of Sponsored Programs. And 40% goes to the Office of Research, to my colleague to the right here, and we use that for all kinds of incentivization things. We use it for faculty startup. We use it for requests outside of the major internal grant programs and so on. To a large extent, that 40% stream of F&A is lifeblood for the research enterprise here at WKU. Bad news is that many contracts and grants don't allow F&A charges. This has become a trend where the sponsoring agency will either say we do not allow F&A or we limit it. Our Chinese flagship program is an external grant is limited to 8% F&A. Many grants we get from the state carry no F&A at all. Fellowships typically do not carry F&A. So the red bars here show the number of proposals, again, in each of these dollar groups that actually carry F&A, and there's that same arrow in that $250,000 range where not only are we successful in getting proposals funded, those proposals have a large chance of carrying F&A dollars. 85% of them carry F&A dollars with them, and therefore that's an excellent way of contributing to the overall growth. Again, this is the number of proposals. The same chart related to dollars, and this is about as busy as it gets, but it summarizes everything you've seen so far. The red numbers are the numbers you saw before, that 205% success rate in terms of proposal number. The green numbers are the dollar yields, the number of dollars we get back for every dollars we propose. But the kind of bluish numbers are the F&A we get on those dollars, and the number is nowhere like 42%. Even though that's our federally negotiated rate, we do not get 42% of $20 million in F&A. I wish we could get something even close to that. Our F&A effective rate, total F&A received versus dollars earned, is about 6%.
With your institutional reclassification as a research one, will that change your negotiation on the federal rate that you will get?
Okay, well, if we become a doctoral research university, which is not Research One, but if we get not directly, but we will be, it would not be surprising for them, for us to ask for a higher negotiated F&A rate because we will have greater infrastructure costs associated with a higher research enterprise. Again, we calculate that in arrears. Yeah. After the fact, based on what we spent versus what we got the formal year. And again, I didn't highlight it again, but you'll notice the largest red bar there is, again, in that $250,000 range. That, I strongly believe, is the path forward. So what do we do with F&A? Well, again, although we get charged in arrears, once you've got it, you can do what you like with it. When we budget it, and then we take the 40% budget in the colleges, 20% sponsored programs, the other 40% goes in an account, an index, in the Office of Research for faculty startup packages, these quick turnaround grants we talked about, basically seed money. And we have about $500,000 a year to do that with, and 600 tenure-eligible faculty. So that's not a huge amount of seed money. To move the enterprise forward, I firmly believe we have to increase the F&A return to the university. And that's not simply a matter of increasing the number in the budget book. We have to earn that number in the budget book through revenue from external contracts and grants. So strategies. Oh, sorry, for you, Ernie, we are finally turning the corner on F&A. The red bar is the budgeted number, and the blue bar is how much F&A was actually earned in that fiscal year. So in fiscal 11, we exceeded our budget of $1.4 million. We earned $1.8 million. And then the research recession hit, and our budget kept going down based on the previous year's earnings, and our earnings was even less than the budget. That, I am pleased to report, has finally bottomed out. In fiscal 15, the one just over, finally our not only was our F&A earnings in excess of the budget, it was in excess of the year prior's earnings. And we're up to now $1.154 million. Optimistically, we have budgeted fiscal 16 at $1.25 million, and we have budgeted that out. So again, $500,000 to the Office of Research, $250,000 to sponsored programs, and $500,000 to the responsible college. So my goal and Larry's goal for the next few years is to keep that trend you see in the last two bars there going up. strategies. Now, let Larry chime in at the end of this if you want. But item number four is we have a new Research Creative Activity Council. It's basically associate deans for research in each of the colleges, plus a representative from the university libraries and a representative from the Senate Ad Hoc Committee on Research. We are working on taking that $500,000 plus the RCAP money and distributing it as skillfully as possible in order to support the activities that are already occurring and drive this FNA number forward so we can, you know, prime the pump even further. We are going to work on the RCAP awards, and we have a committee, subcommittee, or is that group? We're going to be working on redefining these awards so we can perhaps spread the money out a little further. We will introduce this quick turnaround grant support so that someone who needs a little bit of support to help their project but needs it now can apply for and get that. We'll be working very hard to make faculty aware of the opportunities they have to register their intellectual property and not only have it protected by the university, but also possibly make some royalties from it. We will build on our very successful Fuse and Reach Weeks. We will move that FNA number, a program I'm going to talk about in a minute, it's called RISE, for Research Initiatives and Scholarly Endeavors. And we had a long meeting with Robin and Bob Skipper and the folks. We have to get the word out. A lot of the research creative activity at this university is not what you would typically expect at a comprehensive university. It's way, way better than that, and we need to get the word out, and that's important for students to know. It's important for prospective faculty to know. It's important for the world to know all the really good stuff that's going on here, and we'll be working quite hard to get from regular press releases, website updates, and so on, to keep everybody informed of what's going on. This is RISE. Essentially, we go from the brand new faculty member who perhaps didn't even hang up from a postdoc and has little or no experience in writing proposals for external funding. They're scholarly, they can write papers, they can write, they do performances, exhibitions, and so on, but they need a little bit of help in moving them up this ladder of being successful in the external funding game. We've identified faculty at about 8 different levels of experience in this, and the idea is to have mentoring, faculty-to-faculty mentoring in both directions. So you may be at level 3, faculty member level 5 can help you get there, while you're at the same time helping someone at level 2 understand the nuances of being involved in federal funding at a slightly higher level. We started this program last year, about 20 or so faculty got involved. They built something called a Google Scholar profile, and if you haven't gone to Google Scholar, I urge you to do so. Just go to Google Scholar. You can Google it. And if you Google a name of a person, you will see their research portfolio, how many papers they've written, and how many citations those manuscripts or papers have had. And what impact that work is having on the field. Something I didn't know you could do to quite recently is don't Google a name, Google WKU. And you will see all the faculty who have built these Google Scholar profiles and what they're doing and where they're publishing and how many other people are citing and referring to that work in their own research. And our Google Scholar profile is growing significantly, you know, in part because of this. It's a little too early to rate how successful they were. We did the program last year. They had 20 folks. They had to do this as well as submit external proposals, which were internally reviewed within the group, the mentoring process. I can report within the last month one immediate success, $414,000. That's right in that sweet spot, if you recall, grant from the National Institutes of Health. And a little cartoon for that. But, yeah, we are already seeing success of this program, and we will continue that program going into next year. Larry, anything you want to add?
Well, first of all, thank you very much. I'm very, very honored to be able to be part of the program. The RISE program is intended to mentor junior scholars or scholars who are midway in their career. who've gotten past tenure and promotion are looking for their next project. And the idea is to take senior scholars and those who have been successful with grant work and scholarships and then mentor folks up to the next level and so continue it that way. The one thing that's become very clear to me in just my short time in the office is that while we're talking about dollars, the most important resource here we have and our faculty, and we need to find ways to better communicate and better provide resources for faculty to do the things that they're able to do and want to do. So this is one way to do that, by bringing faculty together to work and mentor one another along the way. So as far as achieving the money at the end, as Gordon put it, we're going to get there as long as we put in place the steps we need to get faculty moving in the right direction and provide them in every step of the way for their scholarly. And I think we're in good shape moving in that direction.
Very good. Very thorough. Thank you, Gordon.
What's the grant?
Larry?
I'm curious. What's the grant, the 414? What's that for from National Institute of Health? You know?
Yeah, chemistry grant, help me.
It's cancer-related research, and they're actually looking at the effects of certain cancer drugs on the effects on the ear, and some negatively affect ears and hearing loss and so forth, and so they've been able to pull this together. They had an in-state grant, which provided the seed money to move on to a federal, the NIH grant, but it's very, very interesting.
Is there any avenue for staff to receive funding for research projects?
I didn't know this until I got into the office, but probably half of the grants grant proposals that are out of this university come from staff, not just from faculty. So staff are very much involved in the proposal and grant process. In terms of the current RCAP, I'd have to look at the guidelines again. I can't answer that yet, but that is part of what we're looking at. As effective and encompassing it as we can. But I think if we've got staff, and we have a number of folks around here who have very good ideas and good plans that works to the benefit of all of us, I think we'd be very receptive to that. I can't tell you about the mechanism at the moment.
Right. And I know it's probably a very small number now, but we do have a growing number of staff who have terminal degrees.
Yes.
And are very research-oriented. However, they're not faculty. And I just wondered about that. I know there's actually an organization that's kind of started at some universities to help fund research for non-faculty people. But it's just something I think I could see it becoming a growing need and an issue or something that more staff would be interested in as we go forward.
I completely agree. As a former research staff member myself, yes. I totally agree. And to answer your question, in fact, this came up at a department head's work day. In fact, the current RCAP guidelines are faculty only, and I was actually quite surprised to learn that. And that's something I would actually formally like to charge the RCAP committee to look at, is expanding that just to researchers, not necessarily, you know, faculty.
Thank you.
Just a comment on Dr. Smith's comment, because this categorization of faculty staff is an interesting one, but I'm betting, Gordon, majority of the grants involve staff. If you look at the difference between, they're not classified as faculty, but the people doing a lot of the work involved in those grants are staff positions.
But we do allow staff to be PI. A lot of universities don't.
Okay.
But we encourage anyone to be PI on a grant or PI. And as Bruce said, we have many postdocs, staff scientists, and so on working on grants. They write the proposals. They may not be the PI in all cases, but they are an integral part of it. And absolutely, they're an essential part of the enterprise.
Good.
Anything else for Gordon and Larry? Thank you, gentlemen, very much. Mr. Chair, that concludes the President's report.
All right, the last item for the day is our other business, which consists mostly of announcements. Before we get to that section, I wanted to follow up on our conversation yesterday on the faculty and staff compensation segment that we saw, which I thought was most helpful and beneficial.
And I'd like to recommend out to the board for consideration today that we task the Finance and Budget Committee to continue to assess and track that discussion and apprise the board regularly on the happenings in that area. So can I get the concurrence from the board that we'll task Finance and Budget with that task? I'm going to note for the record that there appears to be concurrence that we can do that. Also, getting ready to hand out the committee assignments for this upcoming year. The tradition among the board has been, as we change from one chair to another, to rotate chairs among the committees so that we keep our knowledge bank growing and cross-trained and whatnot. So I've contacted old chairs, I've contacted new chairs, and we'll get ready to pass it out. I did want to apologize to a particular member. There will be one exception to the rotation. I did ask Dr. Bell if he would continue as academic chair. He's lined up the dog and pony show for so many months now that I think it would be an injustice. I only know what he has planned for us going ahead if we changed him off of academics. So he's agreed to be the exception to that participation, and I hope the board will forgive me for that. I think you might agree that we'll leave his talents on academics. So the committee assignments are being passed around. I appreciate the new chairs and the collaboration on forming these committees and look forward to another great year. In your seat or at your table are the 2015-16 committee or board meeting schedules and whatnot. So you can get those on your calendar. Convocation is August 21st. And I'd like to have some kind of show of hands of the board members that might be able to attend. The president and I have discussed the different formats and some more engagement of the board in the convocation ceremony. And I just wondered how many board members would be available to participate on Friday, August 21st, 8 o'clock in the morning. One, two.
I probably can check in.
Three, four. That's not bad. This late morning. But anyway, I want to encourage the board members that can. We're going to.
We'll follow back up. Julie, yeah. We'll follow back up with you.
Yeah, send a
link. We're going to get some more engagement in the convocation process and what have you. Upcoming dates, committee meeting, September 25th, that ties in with the dedication ceremony for the Honors College, ties in with the orchestra performance that night, ties in with the football game the next day. So a great time for all of us to...
Mr. Chairman, I'll be in Florence, Italy, so I don't think I can make that meeting.
Anyway, we can change any of this stuff so Larry could be here.
It's not, you know, I mean, certain things I can do.
Well, that's not that is committee meetings.
God teasing.
But going forward, that's why we wanted to go on and get all of 16 outlined for you, so that'll be helpful in getting 2016 dates on your calendars now.
Just kidding, Larry, but we appreciate that. We understand.
Contractors would probably like us to slow that, move that back a little bit, but we don't want to get them off the hook.
So committee meeting on September 25th. Next item, obviously, remind you of the Governor's Conference on Post-Secondary Education Trusteeship, September 28th and 29th in Lexington. Julia's been reaching out to the board members on those that can attend that function. Fourth quarterly meeting, board meeting, will be October 23rd and 9th. Homecoming, November 7th. Committee meetings back again December 11th at 1:30. And then that follows... understanding that evening will be our Christmas celebration, and then the next day, of course, is commencement. So that wraps up our 2015 year. Any other questions, comments, whatnot? Dr. Bell.
Point of information.
consequential boards is downloadable. All you got to do is get on the internet, Google it. In 32 pages, you can download it at home.
There you go.
Super.
Julia, if you'll get that link out to
everyone.
Yeah,
I can send everybody that link.
Mm-hmm. Anything else?
Move to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Second. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Thank you all.